Hi, the Gyro Step, Bucks Basketball, Prize Picks sponsor, Chelsea Prize Picks.
Yeah.
Blue Wire.
We have that in common.
What's up, Ty? How are you?
I'm doing well. I always love to hear how people say the pod name.
Is it Gyro? Is it Gyro?
Well, I say Euro Step, so to make it like the basketball move, but everyone says the food, it's a regional thing. So my stand, however you say it, it's fine by me. You know, okay. If people listen and download, they can say the name how they want. They can call me whatever they want. I don't care.
Okay.
But yeah, it is region to region. It varies quite a bit.
I feel like I don't want to speak for New York here, but maybe I am speaking for New York. I feel like it's Gyro here, but then Gyro doesn't sound too bad either.
Yeah. I've heard probably 15 different, some people can roll the R. I can't roll R's. So you hear all sorts of different ones.
Nah,
yeah,
me neither.
I won't even try. I don't want to insult your listeners here.
Okay. We got to get to basketball here, even though we could talk about gyros all day. Ty, who is Boston's biggest threat in the Eastern Conference when we're talking about these playoffs?
That's a great question. I'm still going to say the Bucks, but with the caveat that it's only the peak Bucks. And I don't know if we're going to get that this playoffs, but I think at their ceiling, Milwaukee is the biggest threat to Boston that exists in this Eastern Conference right now. Mm. And I would say outside of that, I think the Knicks are up there. I think the Heat are up there.
Ooh.
I'm not sure they see any other threats in the East. I'm really not. I mean, I don't want to disrespect any other teams. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe the Cavs if everything goes right, but I feel like their ceiling's a little lower than the Bucks, and they've had the same inconsistency, some injury issues. So I just don't know if I could believe that in the second round they'd be able to beat Boston.
Yeah, you didn't mention the Sixers, and I wouldn't mention them as well, but a lot of people like their chances. I just don't know if Joel will be 100%. And then I love Maxey, but man, like a player that young as your second guy and you're kind of leaning heavily on him. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of your one and a half guy, right? With how Joel is. Yeah, I worry about his condition too. I mean, I don't think they were trying to punt that Nets game. I saw some people saying, oh, Embiid's not playing. I was like, no, Maxey's playing. I think they want to win that game. And they did win that game because the Nets are, you know, very not good. But yeah. I think it was literally, I mean, he left the game before that, came back, but he's clearly still dealing with that. And I just think Boston's defense and the size they added in Porzingis. I mean, I'm not saying Kristaps Porzingis is shutting down Joel Embiid by any means here, but I think the caliber of defenders they have throughout that roster, they can send help. I mean, when you have Drew Holiday and Derek White as your kind of pesky guards, plus the Jays on the wing, I just anticipate it's going to be hard for the Sixers to play that Boston team. I think it's going to be hard for them to play that New York team. I mean, I think the 7-8 play-in in the East is really fat with two teams that I think could give almost anyone trouble if everything goes right for them. But yeah, I've never been a big Sixers playoff believer, and Maxey coming on is a big point for them. But I still just worry about Joel's condition. And unfortunately, we're back here again having to worry about it.
So I've been the guy saying all year, it's been the same take. I never folded, Ty. I said, the Bucks will win the East because I don't believe in any other duo more than Dame Lillard and Giannis. But man, they've been making it tough, man. They've been making it tough on me. They're killing me in the YouTube comments. They're saying like, what are you, a Bucks fan? I'm not a Bucks fan. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I just think they, with those two guys, like, I believe in them in the playoffs. Like, I don't think those two could ever fold in big situations.
I don't either. Or at least I didn't. And they've really made me question it too. It's just been such a hard season. I think part of the reason is I feel like they are doing the dirty little, we're going to flip the switch thing. And they're not using that term. But even Dame has talked about, like, you know, after some, like, they lost 6 of 7, like, what, 2 weeks ago? I mean, not like it was ancient history. And it's like, you know, in the playoffs, different intensity, different style of game, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you can't just worry about the playoffs. I mean, I know that's everyone's goal. And I think, you know, the NBA is trending toward just worrying about the playoffs. But I still think the 82-game season is there to build good habits and get yourself in a rhythm and learn your teammates. And some of it's not the Bucks' fault. I mean, the injuries and the, you know, the coaching changes and everything. It's been just a tough season for them to get on the same page. But I do think the Giannis and Dame combo has not been as effective as I hope. It's been good. I mean, they won 49 games. But I thought Marcus Johnson from the Bucks broadcast, basketball legend, shared since late March, they had lost the minutes they were on the court together. the Bucks had, which is that should never happen. I mean, listen, if you're going to lose some games because one of those guys misses games, whatever, that's fine. Those guys need to be they need to be crushing when they're on the court. Because that's what happens when you get the star, you're going to lose the depth. And when you go get Dame, you basically trade two rotation players for one. You got to crush when Dame and Giannis are playing. So I'm a little worried about that. I do think they'll look a lot better than their low points in the playoffs when they get more serious. But now we have the Giannis injury thing. That's another wrench in this. So I think your take is not ridiculous. I mean, I'm biased toward Bucks, of course. But, I mean, it's Giannis and Dame. It's like the guy we always wanted next to Giannis, pretty much the exact guy. If you couldn't get Steph, Dame is the next guy in terms of just the point guard who can stretch the floor the other way. And I think there is certainly a world where it's like, you know, they hold serve without Giannis, hold serve on combos court. And, you know, against these Pacers and Giannis comes back and that pick and roll is just unguardable and they just blitz through the East. I don't think they'll blitz easily through Boston, but, you know, to Boston and they can, I think they can beat Boston too. But I think they really, that combo just needs to be great. I think they can, but they just need to show it consistently, which is the issue for this team.
Can you speak to the evolution of their on-court chemistry over the course of this season?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been weird. I would say it probably peaked around the middle of the season. And then it just felt like so many other things going on. The coaching change, you know, Griffin clearly losing kind of hold of the team. And they felt like they had to make that move midseason. And Doc comes in and, you know, you're acclimating Pat Bev, your new player, who's now a starter on this team. You know, you're changing up the starting lineup despite that.
His effect was nice when he first came over, right?
Definitely. And then when his first couple starts were great too. And then I think you lose Giannis and I think there was just a lapse in focus near the end. But I think, I mean, you know, they need a defender next to Dame. I think Malik Beasley was kind of shoehorned in there just because who else, right? Like it was him or one of the young guys and the young guys tried, but couldn't really grab that spot firmly yet. AJ Green probably came the closest, which is funny because, you know, before the season we were saying, oh, he might not make it through the year. I mean, another shooter, that's not what they need. And I think he really showed a lot on both ends this season. Salute to AJ Green. But I think their chemistry is improving. I think one of their issues has been figuring out like who should have the ball more, which to me, I never thought this would be. I always figure, I mean, just run the pick and roll, let Dame make the call. But then you end up with sometimes teams just say, all right, we're going to give you Brook Lopez every time. Or we're going to give you Beasley half the time, right? Like they'll Brooks guy is in on the action and Dame in point guard mode goes, I'm not going to force it to Giannis. I'm not going to shoot because his shot is just, you know, I won't say abandoned him, but it's not been the same this year, his jump shot at all. So, all right, I'll make the pass to Brook Lopez. I mean, you have Dame and Giannis. You don't want to rely on Brook Lopez jumpers. So I feel like they've been experimenting with not as much of their direct two-man game because teams are just, hey, we'll send three and make someone else beat us every time. So I think that's kind of been the interesting wrinkle we've seen and why it's not progressed as you would hope.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said Dame hasn't been shooting it as well. I saw him play some pretty good games. I was out in Indy. I know nobody was playing defense out there, but man, he was moving well and shooting the basketball well, even if it was like a workout, right? Like it was a little bit like a workout, but I mean, I just looked at Dame like this guy still got it, you know?
So did we.
Yeah. So to me, my thing was, and I don't know how you think about this, like if I was Doc, I would feature Dame because Giannis is going to get his no matter what. I would try and recreate some of the stuff that Dame was doing with the Blazers because Giannis is going to get his 30 and 12 no matter what.
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting thing that it's gone back and forth. I don't know what – I think it's the spacing is just so different. I think that's been Dame's biggest issue is he's so used to, I think in Portland – sure, the attention is on him, but he's used to beating the second guy at the arc. That's where it would come. And now teams at the start of the year covered him like that more. Now I think they've kind of realized, all right, Dame is Dame. Giannis has 32 whatever a game on 60% from the field for the first time in NBA history. We can't keep giving that up. And so now the help is down low. So I think the three-point shot has been there more for Dame. I think he's not wanted to pull it as often because like, all right, I got Giannis. I can't just, you know, I shouldn't take 10 threes. I think, I'm not saying he shouldn't. I that's my take on kind of the, oh, let me run the offense and go. And it's been harder for him to score at the rim. I think there's been more traffic at the rim because of Giannis and because teams, again, like Brook Lopez is out there or Pat Bev is out there. They're like, all right, man, it's Giannis and Dame. We'll let those guys beat us if they can. And I think that's been the issue. But I do think that leaves an avenue of like, if he's just on in the playoffs, and let's say the focus and the approach is different, and he's 45% from three on those pull-ups in the playoffs, teams aren't going to be able to do that very long. So I really think that's one of the big swings for the Bucks is how does teams continue to guard Dame once Giannis is back? Obviously, they're just going to throw everything at him while Giannis is out.
Right.
And how much can he punish them? Because I do think, to your point, Giannis will always get his. But if the offense is sometimes it's just been like Brooke Lopez has 5 threes in the first quarter. And it's like, I love Brooke Lopez. The Bucks offense should not be Brooke Lopez shooting 5 threes in the first. It should be Chris and Dame and Giannis shooting a lot. And I think Giannis always asserts himself later in the games anyway. But I almost think teams have almost like fed into the Bucks making the quote unquote right play. And it's often ended up with the ball out of Giannis's hands too much. But I do think there's a certain, I mean, if they could just get Dame going and let Giannis feast between, that would totally work. I mean, that's fine. Giannis will get his, but you don't want to take the ball out of his hands too much because he is still their best player.
Could Middleton look like the Middleton we remember from the championship run in these playoffs?
I think so. You know, I think what people maybe forget or don't talk about is, you know, there's still some stinkers in there from that run too. I mean, I love Middleton. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a Bucks guy over here is watching him go from second round pick and he and Giannis, the two worst players in their 2K year, 2K season when they were on the Bucks to he's now number two in games played and he's going to break all the non-Giannis records there. It's awesome. But like his game one, or I think especially his game two in the finals, like clunker, had some clunkers against Brooklyn as well, but was also there when you needed him later in series. I think he has shown he can be that guy again. I mean, I think he led the NBA in mid-range percentage this season. He got his three-point percentage back up after a slower start. He's routinely able to rack up assists, even though he doesn't have the ball as much as those other two guys, not because he has the tightest of handle by any means, but just makes the savvy pass and is the best on the team at finding and setting up Giannis. And they still have the best two-man game, especially you look at when Giannis is posting, Chris moves off of that on the same side of the floor better than any other Buck. It's just the years, right? Like he knows exactly where to be. Giannis knows exactly where to put the pass. That's a deadly action for them still, even more so than the Dame version of it yet. So I think, yeah, I'm not that worried about Middleton. I think if he's on the court, he's going to help them. I think he was, you know, good at probably one of their best players in the Heat series last year. It just clearly wasn't enough. But I don't think it was necessarily on him or his decline that they lost. But obviously the year before that, you go 7 with Boston, he's not able to play at all. I think for Chris, the question has just been, is he going to be on the court? Now, what will he look like when he's there?
In hindsight, was the Griffin firing a mistake?
I think I would say no. You know, maybe it could turn out better. But, I mean, we saw reports that they were just freelance on defense because they didn't like his calls. So, to me, that just tells you.
It was a point of no return.
That's what I think. And, you know, I don't think their record would be much better. Like, I don't think Doc has done a worse job than Griffin. I think they were in cruise control mode and they were blitzing teams on offense, but they couldn't play defense at all. Chris Middleton played a lot more of those games, even if he was limited. And he, you know, the health of their team since they hired Doc. I mean, I'm not here to, we've been calling him Mr. Rivers on the pod, right? Like we're taking the basketball doctorate on the Eurostep, but so I'm not, I just want to make it clear.
They were calling him Gil's pod. They were calling him Glenn.
Yeah, they call it. He's been called all sorts of things. Some less charitable than that. So I just want to make it clear. You know, I'm not here to carry water for him or anything. But they really, I mean, their availability has been bad. They've played much better teams. I don't think it was salvageable. I think even now, looking at it, if it is like they say it was, and I have no reason to believe it wasn't, I think they probably just had to do that. I think the mistake was hiring Griffin, not firing Griffin.
So the defense has looked better.
Yeah.
Yeah, how so? How would you explain? Just it feels physical. Like more physical, and you feel like they have a more sustainable scheme now. Like they know what they're doing more. Is that what it looks like to you?
A little bit. I mean, honestly, I think their scheme wasn't the most glaring issue after the first, I think, 4 games. I mean, they were
doing all kinds of crazy stuff the first 4. Right?
They brought the Toronto trap, and it was like
that's a huge pivot, right? From what they were doing.
Well, it's just the personnel. It was never gonna. I mean, Brooke is like a mountain, right? He's like what, 280, I think. I mean, big guy. Right. With Brooke and Giannis, they were last in the NBA in rim field goal defensive, like the field goal percentage at the rim on defense, which that can't happen. I mean, when you trade away Drew, you know your guard defense is gonna get worse. You can't give up the rim. I mean, that's the one thing that this team should be able to guard. And they went back to the drop after those first like four games. It was clearly not sustainable. Again, this should have been a bigger red flag at the time, but the players had to go to Griffin like, we can't do this. Like, we've been the best team in the NBA over the last 5 years by playing drop. We got a drop coverage runner up in DPOY. Let's use him. And they were using him. I think the scheme is still a little better now. I think the focus is just better. When I look at it and when I read some of the things that Doc, Mr. Rivers says publicly and says he says to the team, I feel like his gravitas, he's able to hold guys accountable a little more, get a little more out of them defensively than maybe Griffin was as the rookie coach trying to manage these two superstars and all these other veterans. And I think maybe Doc is a little more comfortable and able to do so. Obviously, I'm not in the room. It's just, you know, my two cents from what I'm picking up. But I think the scheme as well, they're just aggressive. They're even more focused on the paint, I would say. And I think the way it's benefited them a lot, the way the rules have changed. Because you watch, they put hands, every screen, they put hands on guys. And I think the first half of the year, they might have just been fouling out players left and right. But now that they're letting them play a little more, which I'm all for, even outside of the Bucks part of it, I think they're able to get away with it more. Like that Thunder game, the win, was their best game of the season. And it was like the proof of concept of what Doc wants them to do on defense. Just be physical, make them shoot twos. They will leave three-point shooters open. That's my biggest reservation about them. They try and plan out who it is, but in the league now, so many guys are good that it's just tough. But I think they control the rim a lot better than they used to.
How's it looking for Giannis's injury? He'll be back for game one?
I'm not sure. So the report today was it's unsure. And my thought all along has been you probably sit him a game or two at least and then see where he's at. Just because, I mean, with this Achilles, we saw with KD, the worst case, of course, in the finals back in 2019. Obviously, you know, not even going to say the big A word here as it relates to you know, big Giannis Antetokounmpo. But it's a, I forget now the name, but Soleus. It's basically something in the Soleus.
That's basically your calf, right? They're saying it has nothing to do with the Achilles, calf. But you know, the hip bone is connected to the ankle bone connected, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's lower leg below the knee, which is all close enough for me.
Right.
That I think you be careful with it. I think the goal for this Bucks team should be, and I'm getting flat because people are thinking that I'm saying that they should try to lose a game. I think a realistic goal for this Bucks team is go in without Giannis, play the two home games, and at least split them. You can bring him back to an even series, even if you're without home court. Giannis has diced up the Pacers this year. They can't guard him at all. He had a Bucks franchise record point total against them, 62 or 63 earlier in the season. I think you'd rather do that than rush him back. You don't want to risk a catastrophic injury. And even just outside of that, just in terms of something lingering, you're not going to have the opportunity to have this break again, right? I mean, you get 10 plus days off, maybe 2 weeks off if he misses a game or two. I say make the most of it and try to get him as whole as possible. Because from here, I mean, you get days off in the playoffs. There's no back-to-backs, but there's not going to be like another opportunity where you can say, well, we got to shut him down for 2 full weeks.
Yeah. X factors versus these Pacers. You know, I think that when Giannis comes back, the Pacers will have no answers in transition. For Giannis, like I've watched the Pacers play a little bit this year, and I mean, it's like Olay to the basket often.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Bucks issue is it's hard for them to start transition sometimes. So you hope that the new lineup with Pat Bev can feed into that. But I've had people ask me, like, how the Bucks don't score when you look at the league ranks, that many points in transition. Is it not a focus for them to run in transition? And I said, I don't think it's not a focus. I think they just haven't forced enough turnovers. And outside of Giannis, they're very slow. You know, like they're just a slower team. They're not able to run as much outside of him. That's been a big issue for them, I think, these last couple seasons. And, you know, the Dame trade adds a certain level of explosion on offense, but he's also not, you know, going to run to the rim and slam over someone in transition. They really haven't solved that issue outside of playing some of these young guys more who just really don't seem to be in the rotation right now. So, but certainly when Giannis is out in transition and even in the half court, I mean, Miles Turner just can't do anything about him. Siakam, you know, we haven't seen him in the Pacers part of this matchup against the Bucks yet. But in years past with Toronto, you know, obviously they had a bunch of success against Giannis 5 years ago. I think that was a team effort, a very coordinated team scheme. It was not just Siakam. I don't think he is going to be able to guard Giannis one-on-one. So I think it's really going to be about when the help comes for Indiana. They're not just going to leave guys on an island. Can the other Bucks capitalize? And the answer should be an obvious yes, I think. Chris Middleton, Damian Lillard, two guys who you have to be able to trust in the playoffs. And then the rest of the roster, it's, you know, maybe not always the most capable three-point shooters, but they'll take them or they'll do something else with the ball. But I think that's always the question for the Bucks. And the answer should be, well, now that you got Dame, absolutely. Dame and Chris on the perimeter, if the defense is scattered or bending one way, that should be easy pickings. It hasn't always been for them, but, you know, you've seen the highs of this team. It's been that way. It really has. Of like, oh, Chris is wide open this possession. That's something we're never used to seeing. Or
right.
Dame is wide open. And that's how it should look a lot of the time. I mean, it's not going to all be sunshine and roses, of course. But I think the X factor will just be the Bucks' three-point shooting as a team. And then I think Pat Bev is going to have a big role to play because my concern about –
Good podcaster, by the way.
Great podcaster. Great promo man for a podcast.
Those two are good. I mean, Rowan. I used to like Rowan when he used to battle, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My co-host said he would battle rap Rowan. I was like, you got to watch the tape, dude. No, you don't want to do that. He's real. Rowan doesn't actually, as far as I know, unless he does it under an assumed name. I have not seen him do it. I was like, right, it's serious. Yeah. But that's a great podcast. But, him and Lopez together.
Yeah.
You lose a little bit of the outside shoot. I mean, Brooke will knock down a lot in some games, but, I think is below 35% on the year. And Pat Bev's offense, I mean, he's got a wrist problem now, but, is not necessarily a sharpshooter anyway or always game to game. But you did see them win that way in 21, just leaning on defense and rebounding. So I think the goal is to do that again, but with the extra outside burst from Dame.
So, yeah, we're not going to talk about the West too much, but I would like to talk about this MVP race, if you will, before we head to a Combos Court favorite, Rapid Fire. But before we get there, it's crazy. I mean, OKC wins the West, and I always had Jokic as the MVP for a while now. I'm not mad at Luka winning it because his numbers are absolutely ridiculous. I feel Jokic's impact on winning is probably more than any other player in the league. But then you see Shea, and they win the East with such a young team. His numbers are great. I don't know. Like, I think it's almost recency bias at this point because, like, I just saw yesterday that they actually won the East. Like, it's in stone. I mean, it was very close, but he has a great case for MVP, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've seen some, and I've got to look at the raw numbers because I don't trust all the advanced stuff, but I have seen that just his level of play dipped pretty significantly over the last 20 games, and they still won the West, like you say. I mean, it's not like
that's like Jokic's case, because when he's out, they're toast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think there's some Bucks fans that are mad about Jokic probably getting a third, because I mean, I think Giannis had a couple great opportunities to do so. I don't stick it in my craw, Giannis didn't win. I'm not gonna hold it against other players. And I think there was certainly a couple seasons where it was like, all right, we don't want a guy to get three in a row, or we don't want a guy to get three this early before he's won all this stuff. And the same Bucks fans who thought it was stupid then are now saying, well, if we didn't want Giannis to get three, then Jokic should. No, if you thought it was stupid then, don't put it forward now. I mean, let's do the right thing. I think Jokic should probably.
I mean, it sounds like a fan. Like, that's what fans do, man.
Exactly. It is. But I think Luka's got a good case.
Yeah.
It's so funny though in the West. I think it kind of shows you how silly some of this stuff is and just how obsessed the standings part of it makes people. Cause I mean, how many games were the Mavericks from the play-in? And if they were in the play-in, is this a combo? And I'm not, it's just like, it feels like you look at it with disdain, like, a play-in team. You'd never let a play-in team guy win it. And I've probably said a similar thing. But when all is said and done, the Mavs are one game in record better than the 7-seed Pelicans, right? And it's like that one game. Luka, maybe that's, they lose two more games that Luka doesn't play. And now they're in eighth. And it's like, Luka can't be MVP. They're in the play-in. I just think how arbitrary some of the lines are drawn with this award it fascinates me. I think the discord around this award is very strange, but I think Jokic, Shea, Luka, I'll throw Giannis in, even though I don't think he's the top half of the ballot guy this year because of not just record, but just the Bucks whole season. My argument is I think he kept them afloat, and the only reason it wasn't a much worse season, but I also get not winning MVP when, the vibes around the team just frankly aren't very good and they're not playing a good brand of basketball for so much of the season. I don't think that's an MVP season. So I'm not going to say he should win. And then Tatum and Jalen Brunson probably should be on the ballot too. But I think Jokic, it's hard to argue against him because of what you say. I mean, he their team is awesome. And I think he is the most complete offensive player in the league right now.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, let's get to rapid fire and we'll get out of here. So, Combos Court rapid fire. Now, better coach, Bud or Doc?
I'm going to say Bud. I do think they're in the same overall tier, but I think Bud is toward the top end of that tier. And that's just like culture setters, kind of guiding hands. They're not the tactical geniuses game to game that I think people really love the most about coaches because you see it the most. Mm-hmm. But I think they build over time. And I think Bud is really good at that, really underappreciated at that. I think whoever hires him, they're going to feel great about it. He's won two Coach of the Year awards at his only two stops so far. I think he's going to be the best coach on the market. So I'll say Bud. Miss him.
More deserving of Defensive Player of the Year, Wemby or Rudy?
Oh, that's such a hard question. I find it so difficult because they're such different cases. You know, Rudy, it's like Anchor, are they the best defense in the league? I think they are. Like Anchor, one of, if not the best defense in the league. That's a very easy Defensive Player of the Year case. And I think it's a good one. I mean, it's, you know, what happens on the court should matter. But then you look at Wemby, their team stinks. They're not great at anything. It's not his fault, though. You know, I mean, his defensive performance is otherworldly. It's not on him that they're young and bad and probably don't really mind adding some more lottery picks. I got to pick. It's rapid fire. I'm not going rapid enough for you. I know. I'll say Wemby, even though I don't feel good about it. I like the better team guy to win usually.
Especially for this award, and especially if you're like the worst team in basketball or one of them.
I know. But man, you look at what he does. It's like,
yeah.
It's unseen.
I mean, Wemby's going to have a bunch of MVPs when it's all said and done.
Oh yeah. Keep saying that Dame and Giannis figure it out now because there's only a couple of years before this guy is probably winning many, many, many trophies. I know it's too much, but I really feel that way watching him.
You know, I was on a live show with my guy Coach Nick earlier, and he was saying how on an interview that Rudy says that he doesn't go for every block, and I'm thinking like, wait, he's like on some media thing going. He's like on a media tour, like trying to get this defensive player throwing subs out there, like because he knows Wemby's numbers are crazier.
Yeah, it's where the Spurs ended the 21st in defense, so very, very not good.
So wait, how many teams are worse than them? What was it? Just the Wizards?
Nine. No. They're 21st. So there's nine.
No. In the league, their record.
Oh, overall.
What the Wizards are worse, right?
Pistons, Wizards, Hornets, and Blazers are all worse.
It's actually like not so bad to be honest. To like what that team has on their roster, yeah.
No, I mean I think the bottom of the East is just like one of the worst units you'll ever see.
Dame Lillard is a top blank player of all time. Fill in the blank.
75 is too easy, right? I mean, he made the 75 team, so that's kind of built in, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna just name off 70 guys, but I think that's probably I wouldn't go too much higher than that. Because I do think when you do the top of all time, you know, the stuff like the not just winning in regular season, but playoff stuff and what you're able to accomplish there. I mean, I know he had the Western Conference Finals run. I'll tell you, I think he could probably make you say 50 if this playoffs go a certain way for he and the Bucks, but I wouldn't say much higher than 75 right now.
You want to hear a hot take?
Yeah.
I think Dame Lillard is a lot closer to the level of player to Steph Curry than he gets credit for.
I think so too, but then what is Steph 10-0 against him in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, resume wise, it's really not close, but I do feel like some of that is just the situation that Steph got in.
100%. I will say what made me not, and you know, he's on the Bucks now. I should be the one who's, he's better than Steph. I'm not, that's sarcasm. When, what was that, 20, was it 19 when KD didn't play the whole series?
It
was like, okay, the Warriors are a machine, but they had to give up their depth to get KD. And the Blazers caught him without either. So it's like, okay, it's still not even. The Warriors, I mean, they had Klay, they had Draymond. It's a great team. But this Blazers team with CJ and all these, I think they had Nurkic, all those role players. It's like, this is the time, right? Like, you can go get them. And the way Steph just dominated that series and they swept them without KD playing a minute. I do think that's where that argument died. Fair or not, the team are what they are, but a sweep without KD playing a single minute, like, I think it's and nothing, you know, no real rebuttal. I mean, Dame has played excellently since then, but so has Steph. So I think they're not terribly far off, but I think there is a clear better player there.
Yep. Who's your most improved player?
I want to say Kobe White. I mean, it's nothing against Maxi, but
Maxi was already good. Maxi was already good.
Yeah, exactly. This is an award I feel like they need to, I don't know, make a separate one. Maybe that would be silly, but I do think there's too often where it's just like, you know, what do you go, 21 points to 25? I mean, he made a big jump, but I think Kobe White went from like, is he going to be a free agent? Are they going to let him walk? Are they going to dump him? Is he going to take minimum to like, oh, he's really good. Like, I think that should be the spirit of the award, personally.
Lou Williams or Jamal Crawford?
I'm going to go with Lou Will.
Okay. I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it. Last one. Most underrated Bucks player ever.
Ooh, so many good options. I'm probably not going to go with a current team guy. I think because they got, most of them got to win. Honorary mention, Wes Matthews, never got the ring in Milwaukee. Tremendous, tremendous player. I mean, a guy is probably averaging like 5 points per game, and the impact he had on winning went way beyond.
Original 3-and-D guy? He's like an original 3-and-D guy, right?
Yeah, he's a classic 3-and-D guy. I will say, because he just got snubbed to the Hall again, I will go back to Marcus Johnson, who was just a phenomenal, the first, coined the term point forward. Wasn't the first one in basketball, but coined the term tremendous point
forward. He still
forward.
Dunks on his birthday, right?
Every year. One of the best color commentators in the NBA, a tremendous player. But I think him, Sidney Moncrief, that whole era of the Bucks is an underappreciated era.
One of the greatest roles in a basketball movie, too.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, his son was on my pod a while back. For those who don't know, he's the guy who narrates Gil's pod, and he's like a meme king. Like, he's the best at doing basketball memes.
Yeah. The overlord of NBA Twitter. He runs it. And more than NBA too. I see he's doing that WNBA draft tonight as we record.
Yeah.
But yeah, Marcus and Sid, and you know, those great teams where they just could not get over. I mean, they had Dr. J, they had Bird. I mean, true legend. I think those guys are legends too, but never got to the finals because they just couldn't beat those teams. But truly great Bucks teams of the 80s. I think people forget when they think about Milwaukee over the 90s and 2000s. Not as good outside of a couple of years. 80s Bucks were a force, though.
Yeah, I mean, this player gets his just due. He's not underrated, but I feel like Bucks Ray Allen is kind of like underrated, you know?
People think of the Miami version.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, this guy was getting in his bag off the dribble, three-level score, like ridiculous athlete, a great shooter, obviously, as everybody knows.
Well, yeah, the crazy thing about that still holds the Bucks single-season threes made record. It looked like Dame and Beasley were going to break it this year, and they both fell just short. And I was saying on our show, how many teams have that record 20-plus years old? With the way shooting has changed in the league. I mean, that's a testament to what Ray was doing. Right. That nobody's, I mean, all these Chris Middleton seasons. I mean, now you got a Dame here for a full season. It's like, man, that's a hell of a shooting performance in, I think, 02 to stand 22 years here.
Yep. Hi, great stuff. You're always welcome back on the show. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media and everywhere else.
Yeah, mostly active on Twitter, X or whatever, at Ty Windisch, TiWindisch. And our show, you can find wherever you listen to Combo's Court. You should listen and subscribe to both, of course, and leave a rating and review, of course. But it's Eurostep, GYROstep. Otherwise, all of our links are at gspn.info as well.
Yep, shouts to the NBA Report. Like this video, share this video, subscribe to the channel. And we are out of here. Later, Ty.
See ya.